A long time ago on a planet so bare, some water and dirt got mixed up with the air. Some sand and some rocks to make it just right. The stage was all set in the deep of the night. A bolt of white lightning, a great peal of thunder. And suddenly there was a marvelous wonder. The rocks yielded metal, the sand turned to glass, and as the years flew, a new thing came to pass. The metal formed gears, the glass a watch face, and little by little things fell into place. The parts came together just like a good rhyme, with ticks and with tocks and with hands that tell time. A beautiful watch began ticking one day, formed all by itself in a wonderful way. Ridiculous story, you say with a grin. Impossible, laughable, surely a sin. A watch needs a watchmaker, that's plain to see. A designer and builder that makes it for me. Now all life is made of some interesting stuff. Cells of all shapes, like blobs filled with fluff. But looks are deceiving, and what we find there are factories and highways and gadgets to spare. Assembly lines, robots, electrical cable, libraries, software. Just look, if you're able. The marvels we see with a microscope stare make a watch look so simple, we dare not compare. Now the doctors from Oxford say cells came by chance, from goo down to you, in a beautiful dance. What's wrong with their thinking to have such odd notions, that cells could just happen from dirt and warm oceans? A cell and its wonders amaze all who see. And a cell like a watch, by chance, cannot be. Those cells can build hummingbirds, agile and free. Bumblebees, snails, my backyard oak tree. A woodpecker built with a jackhammer nose. Lightning bug, monkeys, a beautiful rose. And beetles with bombs that give frogs a surprise. Chameleons with camouflage and some weird eyes. All nature on Earth is so perfectly fine, we have to admit that it's all by design. And our Maker owns everything, both great and small. He's the masterful watchmaker, Lord over all.
Talking about, I believe, one of the most important subjects of all as we talk about a worldview. We've discovered that our worldview literally taints or it begins to color the way we see everything in life. We talked about the rose-colored glasses. We talked about how one sees the world through one's worldview is in totality. We see everything through those lenses. Last week, we discovered that a well-reasoned worldview then addresses five of the ultimate questions of life. And we said these five ultimate questions that must be answered in a well-reasoned and a well-defined worldview is origin. Number one, where did the universe and where did human beings come from? A worldview must answer that. It must answer the question of meaning. What is the meaning and the purpose of life? Is there purpose for us being here on this planet? Morality. How do we know what is right and what is wrong? Is there some source to find, you know, a moral code by which we should live our lives? And is there one that is authoritative, or is it just one's view and that's all it is? What about destiny? What happens after we die, after we take our last breath here? Or what about history? Is history just going in cycles? Is it cyclic? What you see now goes around, comes around, you'll see it again. That our earth is spinning and so is history. That it's going nowhere, it's not linear at all. Or is history linear? Are we headed somewhere? Is every day that passes by, are we closer to some event? Are we all closer to some event in our personal lives as the days go by? So is history cyclic or is it linear? Are we headed somewhere? Now this morning we're going to investigate, I believe, to be the number one question of all time. And that is the origin of the universe and of human life. And once again this morning I'm going to simply endeavor to put the facts out on the table and then allow you to make and come to your own conclusions. Evolutionists would boldly declare, and they do, that there is more than enough solid evidence to support their position. Matter of fact, the National Academy of Sciences, their official position regarding the origin of man states the following. Evidence for common descent, which is evolution, has been provided by paleontology, comparative anatomy, biology, geography, embryology, biochemistry, molecular genetics, and other biological disciplines. The Council for Democratic and Secular Humanists, they state the following on their website. Organic evolution is now documented by empirical evidence from geology, paleontology, biogeography, anthropology, and by physiology. So friends, if they say and if they declare that there's no other way or other explanation for man other than evolution, and if they proclaim that empirically they have all the facts, then I believe we ought to look at those facts very carefully this morning and find out, do they really stand up to investigation? The actor Richard Dreyfuss, which many of us know from his various movies, he made an interesting comment on PBS Nature program as he was talking about the Galapagos Islands. With great emotion, he stood there and described a spectacular display. And the display was of sea lions that were out there surfing as though they were having fun off the very island whose name is frequently associated with Charles Darwin. As he watched in amazement, he said, I quote, "I am trying to understand the science of evolution, but right now all I can see is a miracle." Friends, I want you to know there's something on the inside of man that knows that there is something more than just the biological, just the chemistry of life, that we are comprised of a body, soul, and spirit. And as he stood there, he was saying, I can see with my eyes this sight, and it reminds me that this is a miracle. And yet, as he begins to shove that aside, he begins then, from that point on, to push aside faith, faith in God, and creation as an act of God, and begins to embrace evolution. But at that moment, he says, but right now, all I can see is a miracle. In Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. In Genesis chapter 1 and verse 27, it says, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female created he them. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 3 tells us how we put all this together. It says, by faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. The term that is used in how God created the heavens and the earth is ex nihilo. Say that with me, ex nihilo. One more time, ex nihilo. That simply means he created all things from nothing. He spoke all things into existence. And Hebrews reminds us that the things that we can now see, The evolutionists would say they have evolved, they have changed, they've gone through all these changes, and what we see now is a result of an explosion in the universe somewhere eons ago that created the sun, the moon, the stars, planet Earth, and the nine planets that we know of in our solar system, and possibly more. So he says, by faith we understand. I would like to begin with creation's grand design. You know, I enjoy, like many of you, especially archaeology as it relates to the Bible. I can watch a dig taking place in Israel, as I've done many times, for hours on end. As the archaeologist proceeds with his dig, he readily begins to identify pieces of pottery, tools, artifacts that are uniquely man-made. He readily sees these items as evidence of design, and he distinguishes them from the natural material, the clay, the rock, the stone, whatever may be around these tools and around these artifacts, from the natural materials from which they were dug. This is unique. This is man-made. This has design to it. This has purpose behind it, where the other is mud, rock, and stone. Likewise, I believe that many features of our universe will convince the unprejudiced mind of their inherent design. Consider with me for a moment the gorgeous rings of Saturn, comprised of trillions of bits of matter, all orbiting in perfect formation, or the spiral galaxies, or the binary stars. A few years ago, Sherry and I spent a night at a cottage up in Minocqua, Wisconsin. As we pulled into Minocqua that evening, the sun had already set. It was now dark. And so we pulled up to this cottage out in the country, and it was so dark you could not see your hand in front of your face, with the exception of our eyes as they were drawn heavenward. From there in the dark of the North Woods, we beheld what I believed to be the most incredible canopy of stars that we had ever seen in our entire lives. And to this day, we often speak about that sight that we saw that night. In that moment, I was reminded of the verse in the Bible that says, "The heavens declare the glory of God." And as you look heavenward, the heavens say, there's a design to all of this, a maker behind it all. Friends, I believe the vastness and the beauty of the heavens compel every single open-minded thinking person to consider how all of this came about. Now for a moment, let's go from the vastness of the universe, which is only measured in light years, which is an incredible when you consider 186,000 miles per second times 60 seconds to the minute, minutes to the hour, hour to the day, days to the month, months to the year, and all of this measurement at 186,000 miles per second, they measure and they say there's millions and millions of years of distance that can only be measured in such a way. That's the vastness of the universe. And it speaks about the glory of God. But I believe that going down to the minutiae, to the universe that is microscopic, that surrounds us, is just as exciting. You know, a single living cell, which is only reasonably visible by at least 1,000 magnification, is an amazing organism to observe. You know, the genetic coding material of DNA of a single cell, although it be microscopic, packs more information in that one single cell than five sets of encyclopedias determining all the characteristics of that living cell. Or consider how a thymus gland in our immune system produces squads of killer cells which protect our health. Out of this thymus gland, it's incredible how each and every squad precisely targets one kind of hundreds of millions of harmful things that attempt to invade our body. And God has created the thymus gland within our human bodies. So when these diseases and bacteria and viruses try to attack our body, it's as though a squad is sent out that is uniquely equipped just to destroy that one bit that would try to harm and hurt our physical lives. That's a miraculous thing. Perhaps the most persuasive evolutionist argument has been that of homology. Homology is similar structures, such as the arms of an ape and of a man. Therefore, the evolutionists look at it and they say that these are from a common ancestor. Let me put a pickup for you for a moment. And in this picture, this is one of their arguments. Their argument is, and if you take and start on the left side there, you see the human structure, the human hand and arm, followed by a dog's leg, followed by a bird's wing, and by a fin of a whale. And they would say that is proof that man and all the beasts of the field, they all have evolved. They all have the same structures. And these similar structures, they say, then is proof that we are all from the same genetic material and that we've evolved some higher than others. Molecular biologists, however, they all know these structures that you see up on the screen and every part of the human body, they are all specified by different genes and by different creatures and different structures. Thus, the implication is actually for a common designer, not a common ancestor. There is a common behind all this. The commonality is not ancestral, but rather it is in the fact of a common design. Let me explain it this way. This building that we're sitting in right now was designed by a man by the name of Don Kimball. Don is a marvelous architect. He is an insightful person. He is a very creative person. And he designed this entire facility, and he designed our children's wings and so on. And he's been a friend over the years, and he's designed much for us at Oak Creek Assembly of God. One day, as I was driving through St. Louis, I saw a building that looked so much like this structure. And I thought to myself, this must be some of the work of Don. And sure enough, it was. It was Joyce Meyer's ministry headquarters in St. Louis, which Don Kimball designed. In Phoenix, Arizona, if you go up into the Black Canyon area, there is a church there that is a beautiful facility. It's called Phoenix First Assembly of God. And again, if you look at it, you see the design on the interior especially, you would say there is similarity between Oak Creek Assembly of God, between Phoenix First Assembly of God and Joyce Meyer's facility, and matter of fact, 1,100 different churches across America, all designed by this design team. So you can look at the design and you can say there's commonality here. It would be foolish to say there was a pile of brick, block, and steel that suddenly all began to evolve and it all came together and it just happened to look similar one to another. No, it was design, intelligent design on the behalf of the architect. Now, the same is true of embryology. That is the embryo in the human being or in the body of a deer, or even of a whale, mammals of any kind. This is an interesting study. High technology and of photography inside of the womb now that we've been able to see, we can see the embryo is unique in every single species. These do not capitulate. They do not retrace, as evolution would tell us, that they all go through the same pattern. So whether it's a deer, whether it's a human being, whether it's a whale, whatever it is, it all goes through within the womb. It all goes through this structure, and it ultimately is going to be determined what it is at birth. Now, I'm so glad, I'm sure you ladies are as well, that if you are a lady and you are married to a man, you're going to have a child which is a human being. You know, I agree with the psalmist. The psalmist said, we are wonderfully and fearfully made. And we've got a designer. Friend, I want you to know, and I've said it before, I repeat myself this morning by saying, the words of a young lady that had been raped at her job, only, I believe, 17 years of age, Lee Azell. Lee said this of the life that was now within her womb, and she would not abort that child because she knew that child was a gift and going to be a unique gift from God, even though it was in the most horrid way that it came about. She said this, men may choose when to make love, and we do not call rape love at all. Right? That's a defiling, dirty, filthy thing. That's abusing someone in the worst of ways. Men may choose when to make love, but only God chooses when to make life. And she said, this child within me, though it starts out in such a way and not a way of my choosing, I believe it's a gift from God, and this child's going to be a gift from God. We are wonderfully and we are fearfully made. I remember the very first time being in the delivery room with my wife. And I was so glad that during the time when we've had our children, that we were allowed to do so. Some of you probably remember back in years gone by where you were to go out and smoke the cigarettes, you know, with another guy that had his wife in delivery at the same time. You were supposed to stand outside, console each other, and the doctor would come out and tell you what you had. Well, I am so glad that I was privileged to be in the delivery room with all three of my children. And there's nothing like it. Nothing like it to watch a life. Someone that's been within the womb and suddenly you meet them. And there's something about that moment. There's a love relationship that nobody has to teach you about. But it's one that's automatic. You look at that child, and that child, though they probably can't see your face or features yet, they look back at you and you know, this is my son, this is my daughter. And they look back and they say, you're my papa. You're the one that's going to watch over my life and care for me here. I am so blessed when I think about that miracle of life. Dr. Foley, which delivered our firstborn, Stacy, I remember him saying to me, he said, who could ever see a scene like this? Who could ever watch this and not believe in God? And he had delivered 7,000 babies at that time. And he had been privileged to see that same thing over and over. But yet, as he stood there with me, he said, who could ever see this and not believe in God? We are wonderfully and fearfully made. And we are unique creation of Almighty God. But there is more. There is a law of energy and the law of entropy. Entropy, by its definition, means something that becomes disorganized. Now, this is very important to understand as it relates to the theory of evolution. These two thoroughly proven laws of science are amongst the most fundamental physical laws in the entire universe. In fact, they're often simply called the first and the second laws. Some of you remember that from your biology and from your science classes. The first law says energy cannot be created nor destroyed. The second law says whenever energy changes forms, though no energy is lost, it becomes more random and less useful. Or put another way, any physical system left to its own tends to move spontaneously towards disorientation and disorganization. It's like a spinning top. I think we've all had a top at some time or another as a child, and we played with it, we got that top spinning, whether it's the kind you pump this way or whether it's one that you pull the string and let it go. It goes and goes and goes until it's reaching the end of its lifespan of spinning. And what does it begin to do? It begins to wobble back and forth. It becomes very disorganized. And that is exactly what happens. Now, entropy then increases from generation to generation as time goes by. Their evolution requires the opposite in order for it to be true. It demands a spontaneous decrease in randomness and an escalating complexity of life, which does not take place. Let's put it in one more example. The example is you buy a brand new home. And that brand new home, I mean, you step inside, the carpet's new, and, you know, the windows, they all work so nicely. And the drawers, you know, you open them up, and many of them, you start to close them, and they close on their own. And, I mean, everything's working. It's all new. You turn on the water, and, you know, the water system, everything's working right, and the sewage systems. And, I mean, it's brand new. Wouldn't it be nice to buy a brand new house and never touch it again? Never paint, never replace, never to fix. And all of us that own a home, we all know a home will eat up all the time you'll give it and all the money you have. So as time goes by, that house does not just automatically build on a new room. The room that was built will fall apart if you're not making sure the roof is on and windows and all this kind of stuff that's secured from the outside. And so what they're trying to tell us, that as time goes by, the human evolving is going to get stronger and stronger and stronger. And so from the single cell up to what we are today, there is no divine intervention. It's just going to get stronger, better all the time. And we know that is not true. The law of the energy, the law of energy, first and second laws, they tell us that is not true. There's something else, though. That is the lack of fossil evidence. How many have ever seen the fossils, whether it's, you know, you're at a gathering, you know, at the museum, or you're in some kind of a, you know, a place where they're talking about life, talking about planet Earth, and you see all these fossils that are out there. Now, they would have us believe that the fossils tell the story and that it's ironclad, that it is empirical, meaning that it's going to stand the test of time. Now, I'm trying to tell you that it will not, and here's the reason why. You see, fossil evidence, they believe, then confirms evolution. In 1859, when Darwin published his book, The Origin of Species, he was concerned that there would be a lack of transitional fossils, which he was unable to find at that time. And if these fossils did not show up, that in time it would disprove his theory of evolution. And so Darwin then hoped that in the years to come, more fossils would be found that would support and prove his theory, that this missing link would be found, is what I'm saying. It has now been 160 years since he authored that book, during which time countless additional fossils have been found by scientists searching all over the world, looking for that missing link. But friends, to date, no credible transitional fossil forms or missing link has been found. There have been hoaxes, forgeries, such as the Dino bird, a feathered flying dinosaur. Put a picture up for you. Notice here once again, they would say that the dinosaur on the left, look at its, you know, skeletal structure, is much like that of the duck next to it. Therefore, the duck must have either evolved from or part of the history of, you know, the dinosaurs that preceded. The interesting thing about the Dino bird is the fact that it was debunked as a fossil forgery by the prominent British scientist by the name of Sir Fred Hoyle. And today, you can go online and you can go and see how that was a doctored up piece, taking something that was on the left, making a duck of it on the right. Today, the evidence is in, however. It shows that life bursts suddenly in completed form. Now, let me run that by again, because that's very, very important for you to understand. The fossils prove, rather than there being a series of evolutionary steps from, as they said, the goo to the zoo to you, all right? There's a problem in here. There's something missing in this entire line. And so the evidence is now in that shows that life bursts forth suddenly and in its completed form. Let's say it together, suddenly, and in its completed form. God did not create things that were half-baked. He created things and brought them forth in a sudden form. The earth itself and the heavens, he said, let there be light. And there was light. And he formed man from the dust of the ground, put the breath of life within him, and he became a living soul. Not a Neanderthal rubbing his, knuckles on the ground as he walked along and ran along. The missing links, friends, are simply missing. And in 160 years of searching globally, trying to prove out that evolution is true, they've been unable to find any of these links. Fourthly, there's a missing mutation mechanism. Now, I use that term mechanism as a trigger. That is one of the terms that they will use in the classroom. That is one of the terms that they use in describing the mechanism, as you saw on the little clip that we showed prior to the message this morning. It showed that bolt of lightning come down. They literally believe that there is the, swamp, and single cells were in there possibly, and, this bolt of lightning came down almost, in a mysterious, life-giving way and started the spark of life within these amoebas, and the amoebas began to multiply and so on and so forth. Evolution, then, is a theory that is totally lacking in any credible mechanism. Natural selection cannot produce new genes. It can only select from amongst pre-existing genetic material. So when it all boils down, it's God or blind chance. They are the only two conceivable sources of genetic information. Mutations are only proposed mechanism whereby new genetic material becomes available for evolution. The catch is this, however. Rarely, if ever, is a mutation beneficial to an organism in its natural environment. Although all observable mutations, almost I should say, all observable mutations are harmful and many are lethal. And that is why you have the extinction of certain animal life on the planet. Though 80 years have gone by, 80 years of radiation bombardment experiments with fruit flies. Now, some of you are familiar with this study. It involves 3,000 consecutive generations. So they took and nuclear zapped 3,000 generations of flies to see if that would somehow cause a mutation and would cause some kind of a unnatural improvement in their genetics. And after having done so for 80 years and 3,000 consecutive generations, there has been no clear genetic improvement. Matter of fact, they have discovered that it does nothing as time goes by. Variations within the gene pool of a particular kind of animal, yes. But evolution, new kinds of animals, absolutely no. Evolution is a theory entirely without a believable mechanism. A mechanism, remember, is a trigger that gets everything started. They would say it's the Big Bang. They would say it's a bolt of lightning. They would say it's various things, but there's nothing credible when you begin to look at it in light of life as we know today, the fossil history, and the likes. Evolution is a theory then without a believable mechanism. We know what the mechanism, we don't call it a mechanism. We know who it is. It is God. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Many animal kinds have become extinct, as shown by the fossil record. And once again, no animal has ever been observed to evolve, ever in the history of science. Let me close with statistical probability. Friends, I believe the force of statistical probability mandates creation. Evolution totally fails under statistical modeling. It turns out, friends, that there's simply not enough possible interactions between particles in the history of the whole known universe to satisfy the remote odds involving one single cell by chance. They have said the chances of a single cell evolving into something other than that original cell and its properties is 1 in 10 to the 2,000th power. So evolution, when you look at it, is the longest long shot you could ever bet on. The possible remote statistical odds are often then obscured when you find out the probability, the statistical probability, that there could ever be evolution. They will always add to it what they would call as time. We would say it's a bogus time frame of billions of years. They're saying that in order for this to happen, being that it's statistically improbable, and matter of fact, anytime you get above 10 to the 100th power, they say, beyond that, it is an impossibility. However, let's just say that it is possible, which they say, and not only is possible, they say it did happen. So here's what they'll do. They will take and add these bogus years of billions of years. And they will tell you that this earth, over its billions and billions of years, has morphed and has taken on new characteristics by which life has come out of the single cell, multiplied. It became more complex and more complex until finally became what we know today as human life. And they would say, we prove it by showing you the hand of a human, leg of a dog, the hand of a monkey, or the fin of a whale. And it shows that they're all kind of, somehow it's all evolved. And therefore, what they'll say, being the probability, and they know this, the evolutionist knows the probability is almost zero. But in order for this to work, you've got to add time to it. Let's put it in another way of understanding it. Not only here in Wisconsin, but in the United States and around the world. Matter of fact, I believe in every nation I've ever been in, they've got a lottery. Have you ever looked at what the statistics are? I mean, they're printed in the paper all the time. Whenever they have an advertisement, it also has to tell you what the probability is of you winning the jackpot. And so this jackpot is out there. And here's what they're saying. If you get enough people doing it enough times, there is the probability that someone is going to get lucky. They're going to make their millions or thousands, whichever the case of the lottery is at the particular point. And so here's what I would say to you. So if you're going to live to be 2 billion years old, you've got a great chance of probably winning the Wisconsin lottery. But apart from that, you just as well give the money to me. And I'll go on vacation. Because you need time. Therefore, they come up with this bogus time periods. And these time periods are trying to prove something against the two laws of science and against all of what we know to be true in the fossil record and against all of these triggers that have any kind of realm or possibility of ever taking place. And then once we've tried to replicate them in 3,000 generations of these fruit flies, they're saying there is no change that was helpful or any mutation that was meaningful. Therefore, you've got to get more time. 3,000 is not enough. 80 years is not enough. You've got to put millions and even billions of years out there. You know, here's the interesting thing. They have discovered that by the best science, and I know this will really, I mean, this becomes hard to understand and grab a hold of, because we've been so ingrained with the millions and millions and billions and billions. And therefore, when somebody comes along and says, you know, the best science today, based on whether it's true carbon dating or whether it's on the magnetic field around the earth or the sedimentary in the oceans, any of these things, or even the dust on the moon. Remember when the first landing on the moon took place? Some of you do. Come on, help me out, those of you that, if we can still remember, all right? And they all thought that when they landed on the moon, what was going to happen? Tell me. They were going to sink out of sight, right? Because the dust was going to be what? So deep that when they landed, they would sink right into it. But they found out that it was only about yay so. And they were basing that upon the fact that out of the billions and billions of years. So all I'm saying is the best science says the earth is probably somewhere around 10,000 years old. Now I know you go, how can you even believe that? You see, when you believe the scriptures and you believe that God created all of this, and if you read the history of man and you begin to look at the best of science, it is not so unbelievable, because we don't need billions and billions. All we need is in the beginning, God. Someone said this, imagine a tornado sweeping through a junkyard. And as it passes on its way, there in its wake is a brand new Boeing 747 jumbo jet, which of course has been fashioned and assembled by random chance out of junk in the junkyard. Friend, I want you to know this morning, you are God's special creation. God created you. He formed you within the womb. It was David that said, you knit me together in my mother's womb. Life is precious. You're God's special creation. You're his crowning work. You're the love of his life. He knows you by name. He knows how many hairs are upon your head. He loves you. The Bible says you're the apple of God's eye, which simply means you're the focus, you're the center. That's where God's eye is focused. He's focused upon you because He loves you. He created you. And God has a plan for your life. And the plan that God has for your life, that is where the millions and billions and forever comes in. God alone is the God of all eons past and all future ahead. I love that song, Amazing Grace. When we've been there 10,000 years, we've no less days to sing His praise than when we first begun. Hallelujah. And then after the 10,000 years, the next billion starts. And after that, you see, death was never part of God's plan. That's the mutation. That's not God's original design for mankind at all. God loves you. God's got a plan for you. And He's your Father. And He wants you to come home today. He wants to love you and embrace you. And there's something inside of the heart of every man, woman, boy, and girl. It says, I want to know where I've come from. I want to know why I'm here. And I want to know what's going to happen after my last breath. I want you to bow your heads.